Pain. Leg pain, neck pain, back pain. At some point in our lives, all of us will have to deal with pain on some level. But what if it becomes more severe? How do we cope? How do we determine the cause? And more importantly, how do we treat it and become pain-free? I'm Kermit Poling, and tonight's Health Matters is all about the topic of pain. And joining me this evening is Dr. William S. White II from Louisiana Pain Physicians, an expert on the topic with some novel insights into treatment. We'll also be taking your questions this evening. You can call us at 800-552-8502. So, Dr. White, welcome to Health Matters. When I think of pain, I just always imagine my great Auntie Anne, back home in Cleveland, who is always quick with her personal diagnosis, says, "Oh, you've got a pinched nerve," something like that. But what are the most common causes of pain?
Well, the most common cause of pain, obviously, is muscle and joint overuse, disuse, and other medical things can lead to muscle and joint pain, such as, you know, degenerative arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. You know, arthritis affects the spine. But, you know, we all have heard of the pinched nerve and the sciatica or the slip disc and what have you. It's important when somebody suffers pain and they're starting to particularly have functional loss or affecting their activities, daily living, sleep habits. It needs to be evaluated. It needs to be evaluated. What is the actual cause? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just muscle spasms or sprains necessarily. You know, what is the actual cause? Because you have a very limited window of opportunity to treat some of these disorders effectively.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the topic of the pinched nerve, is that just something that someone made up, or is there really such a thing as a pinched nerve?
Well, exactly? Certainly is. All right. Those who have suffered it will, you know, bet their life that it occurs. And a pinched nerve is any type of compression to a nerve that exits the spine. Our spine, have to remember, is like a tunnel, a pipe. Has a central hole, and that pipe has holes on the side, often like a flute, if you can imagine. And those holes on the side, nerves exit. Mm-hmm. And so any compression to a nerve root itself in the low back or higher up, it can compress the spinal cord, which you have significant more symptoms other than pain often, or even in the cervical spine or the neck. So, so you can have a disc compress a nerve. You can have a degenerative cyst, a fluid-filled pocket, compressing nerve. So anything is touching, compressing, pinching, or moving the nerve out of its normal course can give you nerve pain that people often think is pinched. And then another common cause that we often, you know, don't think about unless you practice this daily is inflammation. Radiculitis or inflammation of a nerve root can cause nerve pain. That's really the most common cause of nerve root pain.
All right, what would cause the inflammation?
It can be a overuse. It can be injury. It can be an immune system reaction. It can be actual from a disc itself, trauma, a partial rupture of a disc, those type of things. But inflammatory pain is the most common, and that's what a lot of the family doctors, when they come in, they think of sciatica, are really trying to treat. You know, they'll do a thorough exam to make sure they're not having any weakness or functional loss, any major change in reflex, or a sensory exam, in other words, how they feel touch. And then they try to treat that effectively, often using anti-inflammatories or oral steroids, rest, trying to determine what actually led to that. And that's why the family doctor is really a great first step. You know, a lot of people think they need to go immediately to the specialist, but the vast majority can be absolutely appropriately evaluated by their family doctor. If it persists, though, family doctor and the patient work together and often state, you know, maybe we need to have this evaluated by specialist. And there's many different types of specialists. But looking by the specialist, what they really need to delineate once they come in is what is the actual source or sources. Okay, people really want to know why. I mean, what's causing it, and they want to have an idea what may have led to it, and then work together to come with a treatment plan of all the options. You know, non-surgical, and in some cases surgical. You have to remember 90% of back and leg or neck and arm symptoms can be treated and corrected without surgery.
You see, this is interesting because I think most people, when they think of having to deal with this type of pain, their first thought is, oh, I'm going to have to go for some sort of surgery. I'm going to have to do something.
That's correct. And I think that's why people delay going to the doctor, because they're fearful of that. They're like, I don't want to have surgery. I just like to see if this resolves its own. They just need to be aware. And just like anything in life, they need to be an educated patient, educated consumer. Mm-hmm. Or what are the other options out there possibly for them?
Okay. 1-800, by the way, the phone number to call with your questions this evening, 1-800-552-8502. You can call with your questions this evening related to similar types of pain that Dr. White is talking about right now. We have on the line right now JP from Lufkin, Texas. Thanks for calling this evening. And what's your question for Dr. White?
I'm 51 years old, and I'm in the pressure washing and painting business. For the last 2 years, late at night, I'll wake up and I'll have sharp, hot, flashy pains in my joints, in my arms, in my fingers. And once if I get up to get a glass of water at 3 a.m. and I move my arms and hands around, it goes away and I don't have any pain during the day, but I have the sharp, inflammatory, like somebody sticking a needle at different points in my arms and my fingers during the night.
Okay, that's a great question. You know, on the surface, when you first started that, describing your symptoms, and it almost sounds like it was an overuse arthritic, but then when you send a pins and needle sharp pain in your arms and your fingers, that sounds very similar to possibly a nerve-related, or we call neuropathic, meaning a global nerve phenomenon. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to come from the spine. That can actually come from nerves where they travel in your arm. We've all heard of carpal tunnel.
Right.
And somebody who's repetitive use holding that power sprayer, that is a very possibility. And we also have a nerve that travels around our elbow, and think of it like carpal tunnel around the elbow, that can also contribute to some of this. What's important to realize, symptoms that wake you up from a deep sleep, okay, that is uncomfortable, that is abnormal. That is absolutely not normal, and that really needs to be evaluated. And it needs to be evaluated seriously. It needs to be looked at to determine, is there a possible progressive nerve problem that can actually lead to loss of function, you know, grip strength loss and strength in wrist control, such as opening doorknobs and jars and in forearm control. So to that caller, anybody suffers that, don't think that is the general arthritis. Pins and needles, crawling sensations, shooting sensations, feeling wet, those tend to be of a nerve source, not necessarily of a joint source.
Okay, because you mentioned carpal tunnel, something like that. Now, is that something that that you would normally treat, or is that
muscular? A carpal tunnel is really it's you do a nerve test to determine how delayed or compressed or affected the nerve is. But those tend to be most effectively treated if it's in the moderate to severe range, by a small surgical procedure where they actually decompress it. There are some physical therapy and braces and medicines that are used in the acute phase to see if is it just a little bit overuse or swelling in that area. But when it becomes chronic, those need to be addressed. They are extremely effectively treated with minimal procedure. That really isn't treated effectively from any kind of non-surgical injection type of procedure.
Okay. A question I have, and this is for my little bit of reading about you,
sure.
Is that you primarily deal with, my understanding is, non-surgical treatments, but it's also something that's called interventional therapy. And interventional and non-surgical, in my mind, of course, seem to clash with each other. So can you define exactly what that is?
Well, interventional, let's say from the non-surgical interventional, our focus is not treating with the use of a scalpel. Okay. Sometimes our medicines are delivered via a needle. Sometimes if somebody has some type of arthritic issues in the spine, we can not only use medicine, but we can actually do procedures where we actually rid the nerve that senses the joint pain in the spine, known as an ablation. We actually have disc treatments. Let's say somebody has a herniated disc, and it's not of too large a size, but it's a compressing nerve. You can actually do procedures that are done percutaneously, meaning through a needle, to decompress or reduce the size of a herniation. There's treatments known as bioacuplasty. Bioacuplasty is a treatment that is, and it's FDA approved, is a treatment that is used to treat painful degenerative discs in individuals that maybe a surgical fusion, such as putting hardware to make a spinal segment less mobile, They really can't do, maybe from a medical condition, or they want to try possibly this before going through that. So interventional, basically anything, it's primarily non-scalpel based to try to treat a site, to try to give it some relief, either temporary or permanently palliative, meaning a permanent reduction, or a complete resolution of that source.
Okay. Call tonight with your questions for Dr. White. We're obviously talking about pain, primarily back pain, neck pain, leg pain this evening. Our number, 800-552-8502. You can give us a call, and we'll be happy to get you on the air with your question. Rodney is holding, and I think he has a question about compressed discs and wondering if he should go to a specialist. Rodney, are you there?
I'm there.
All right, great. What's your specific question for Dr. White?
What my question is, I've been going back and forth with my family doctor for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens about every 6 months. What I have is what he calls a sciatic nerve, which goes down my left leg, back of my calf, back of my hamstring, foot, feels like it's on fire. He'll give me a shot, put me on oral steroids. He's done this now every 6 months for the last 3 years. He keeps chewing me out, telling me I need to go on to a specialist. And I wanted to ask the doctor if, you know, if I'm playing with fire here, should I go on and take care of this or, you know, keep playing this game I've been playing?
Okay, that's a great question. It sounds like you do have the classic sciatica or nerve-based pain originating from the spine. It sounds like the doctor has made it clear that you have some compression or loss of height of your disc, and then it's starting to compress the nerve. What's important in that history is, one, that you have clear leg pain in a defined pattern, and secondly, this is not your first rodeo, obviously. This is cyclic, and I would highly encourage you, at least at one visit, have that evaluated by a specialist to see, you know, do you have other options other than just this transient injection that you may be getting. Sounds like an intramuscular steroid injection. Sounds like the family doctor is doing the best he can, but he's clearly advising you need to take it to the next step. At least one visit to evaluate you physically, evaluate your symptoms, and correlate that with any objective evidence such as, you know, CT scan or possibly an MRI or even a nerve test would be extremely important to determine what is the severity of this problem. But more importantly, what could the future hold if it does go untreated? And there's a lot of non-surgical or interventional treatments that can target that. And there's different ways, even surgically, that could be addressed, not just the big surgery that people always hear about. So to really know what your options are, I think you're going to have to take it to the next level. And I think your family doctor is doing a commendable job trying to push you there. And so I would applaud him about that.
You mentioned the classic symptoms of sciatic nerve problems. What specifically are those?
Well, sciatica in general doesn't necessarily mean sciatic nerve. It just means nerve pain that it radiates to the leg.
Okay.
So we have a bunch of different nerves that travel in different areas anatomically or different areas of our leg. And depending on where they travel, kind of gives the practitioner a hint of what nerve it may be. There is some human variation, but it's basically pain that emanates from the back and radiates down the leg. Now, when it starts out, they may not have any back pain. They could have it's not uncommon to have a very large herniated disc, not have a lick of back pain, but they have leg pain, or they think it's their hip, or they think it's their knee. And then oftentimes they can see an orthopedist who does joints, and they will clearly say, well, this isn't your joint. I think it's coming from your back. And there's many people who have done that. Some people suffer nerve damage, and they'll see a surgeon goes, you know, surgically, I can't treat this damaged nerve. And there is actually treatment out there known as neuromodulation. It's basically, Space Odyssey is here today. the future is now. And neuromodulation is a way to use electrical impulses, such similar to what, you know, people think of a pacemaker, to block the damaged nerve signal, so it helps to reduce or even in some cases completely eliminate that nerve pain. And people who have nerve damage pain, they will tell you it is absolutely horrific.
Mm-hmm.
They're on high dose medications. These medications are impeding their ability to really participate fully in quality of life. Although it is helping, you know, they actually have problems with somnolence and concentration and effective or safely being able to drive a motor vehicle, or if they were in a job, operate machinery. So neuromodulation is often used for nerve damage pain, and it's really remarkable when patients who suffer this start educating themselves, they're absolutely dumbfounded as to what is really out there, and they just really didn't know about it, or maybe it wasn't presented to them, some of these options.
All right. My guest is Dr. William S. White II with Louisiana Pain Physicians. Obviously, our discussion this evening is about pain, back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, which, of course, is what our next question is going to be. But let me give you the number again, 800-552-8502. That is a toll-free number if you have a question for Dr. White, 800-552-8502. So, Amanda, this is Amanda. Good evening to you. And you have a question about shoulder pain, evidently.
I do. Mm-hmm. I'm 25 years old, and this isn't anything life-threatening or work-impeding, but it has been going on for about a year now, and I'm wondering what I should do about it, or at least if I should can justify getting constant massages to my husband. on my left shoulder blade, about 2 inches toward the spine, there's a spot, and it's like this constant, I feel like it's a knot, but it's just completely, I think I get very tense at work. But it gets only in that one spot, so very tense and so tight, and it really gets to a sharp pain after a certain amount of time. And sometimes it would even carry down all the way to my arm and into my fingers, my left arm. And so at that point, I usually go get a massage, which seems to help. And then sometimes I have some, well, this is probably not something good, but I have some muscle relaxers that I had from a wreck, and if I take one of those at night, the next morning it feels better.
Okay. Now, let me ask a follow-up question. You say there's times when it's really severe, you feel pain radiate down your arm and all the way to your fingers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, as far as the shoulder blade area of pain, a lot of times if it was solely just that and you have it with work and so it's stress, what have you, first you have to think of work as ergonomics. Okay. And secondly, the arm, what bothers me is that can easily be the referred pain you have, and that could be from a disc protrusion or a near herniated disc. And the arm symptoms you're having is that inflammation I was talking about earlier that's affecting the nerves, and you're having a basically radicular pain or, you know, sciatica of the arm, let's say. I would first look at ergonomics and making sure that as far as muscle-wise, you don't have really a muscle complex that's initiating this. But if it continues and you start noticing those radiated arm symptoms are becoming more frequent, that needs to be taken a look at. I would not ignore that whatsoever.
It's a pretty common response if you're having a pain in that area to instantly think of, well, getting a massage, you know, having someone massage you. But can that be harmful?
No, I don't think so. I think that area, that's basically, you know, improving blood flow, biofeedback. It does help with stress and tension. But the radiation is the key there. That was the heralding symptom. And it doesn't have to be every time. It can be infrequent. But that can be the beginning or the initial stages of something that is occurring. And at that age, that's pretty uncommon. I don't know if she's ever had a trauma or what have you in the rest of her medical history. But if that any kind of radiation becomes more frequent, particularly ending in the digits of either your hands or your feet, that is not to be ignored.
Okay. Christine is up next with a question evidently about anti-inflammatory drugs. Christine, what's your question this evening?
Hi. Well, my husband and I, you know, we're very active. We walk and swim and play tennis. We're getting up there. I'm 44. My husband's 49. So we're no stranger to pain. And I guess the assumption is frequently with us that it's muscular, certainly our joints and arthritis and all of that degenerative stuff you were talking about. I'm just curious about the over-the-counter anti-inflammatory meds that are available. It's often been told to us, you know, by friends, doctors. You know, just to take, like, if it's serious, to take three of these. I don't know if I can mention the name of the drug, but three of these, like, anti-inflammatory pills, I suppose, three times a day. And I'm just wondering about the effect of that on your liver.
Well, that's a great question. For anti-inflammatories, you want to think more of what are the effects of your kidney. Anti-inflammatories are primarily renally excreted. Okay, so it's the renal effects. There's several things when you look at anti-inflammatories. Let's realize just because something's over the counter doesn't make them any more safe. Okay, that's the first thing. Secondly, you know, when you deal with anti-inflammatories, as any family doctor, internist, or any physician would tell you, is that it has to do with other medical factors. You know, do you have a history of reflux or gastritis of your stomach or ulcers? You know, as far as over-the-counter, you know, safe, judicious use of pains here and there that are arthritic, it sounds like you and your husband are active, which is commendable, and you're having some discomfort or pains with everyday kind of activity like that, particularly recreational activity. Yeah, as for the most part, they're safe, okay? What's interesting is, you know, a study had just come out that was, I think even on NPR they were talking about it, is ibuprofen and, you know, how that can affect hearing. excuse me, and how that can affect hearing. So, you know, the reality of it is that I think medicine's taken in moderation. As long as you don't have a medical disease or disorder that would, your family doctor would say, you know, I think we need to not use those or use a different type of medicine, I think they're fine. You know, something that becomes more frequent, more intense, and is very local, that probably needs to be evaluated as to why that is that happening. Is it really wear and tear, or do you have maybe an underlying medical diagnosis that needs to be looked at? But again, for anti-inflammatories, not acetaminophen, not Tylenol, anti-inflammatories, those are excreted through your kidneys, whereas acetaminophen is kind of a liver or hepatic controlled medicine or excreted medicine. So,
all right, you're listening to Health Matters this evening. If you have a question for Dr. White, you can call us toll-free, 800-552-8502. We'd love to get your question on the air this evening. Getting close to the halfway point in the show, but still plenty of time to get your calls in. This is Pamela, and Pamela, thanks so much for waiting on hold for us. What's your question this evening?
You're thankful. I mean, I'm sorry, you're welcome. Question is, I have a triple fusion, cervical fusion from back maybe 15 years ago. Recently have had an accident, and the doctor is telling me that I have a pinched nerve, also MRI showing some spurring on the back of my neck. I am having pain down the shoulder, arm, and into the top of my hand. The medication that I'm taking, of course, is making me sleepy most of the time. I am still working. If I go without taking the medicine, the pain is really bad. So I take the medicine, and it's like I'm drowsy, drug out all through the day. And I was wondering, with the nerve, the pinched nerve, and knowing that there's some spurs there they're talking about now, what do you see, I mean, as far as treatment? Do I have any options as far as maybe physical therapy helping me? Or, you know, what's the future for this that you can see?
Well, I can tell you, anybody who's had a fusion, and triple fusion for the audience, basically it can either be done with hardware such as a plate and screws in the neck, such as a hinge, if you can imagine, on a door. Or sometimes it's done with bone, depends on the surgeon's comfort and also the just the dynamics or architecture of the spine. But that's what a fusion is to the audience. Now, you've had a fusion and we hear some spurring and you're having nerve symptoms and trying to treat it with medicines, pharmacologically, as we call it. And it seems like that you are still with symptoms and it's affecting, like I said, medications affecting, you know, some activities of daily living. When I look at that is, you know, first, you know, trying to see, is there a possibility of giving you some prolonged relief with that nerve? And you know, there's things where you can put medicine under live x-ray right at that site where that nerve's inflamed, to see if that can give you some prolonged and significant relief that may allow you not to need, you know, obviate the need for that type of medication. But as far as the question, what is the future? That's the crystal ball question everybody wants to know. And when you hear spurring means that's a degenerative phenomenon. Wherever you have stress, you grow extra bone, okay? I.e. arthritis grows extra bone. Sometimes it erodes, but it grows extra bone. And people think, well, that Kennett spur grow large enough to close the hole when I lose function in my arm. That is extremely rare. From a surgical standpoint, if the spur is compressing the nerve hard enough, sometimes they can just go in and just do what we call a foraminotomy, or they just trim that bone down. And it can go as severe as to where you really are looking at another level. We have to understand that when humans mess with the body that we did not create, things can be unpredictable, and it's best to try everything that won't permanently alter the spine first. And if that fails, then the surgeons are going to have to see what they can and can't do. But in your case, I did not hear in that history whether they, under live x-ray, put medicine right at that site to see if that could give you some prolonged permanent relief. I think that's really the first step, since you're already taking the medication. With respect to physical therapy in this case will more likely help the muscle. They can do a topical transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, or a TENS unit. Those are topical type of things that can give some pain. But the symptoms going down the arm, I think that you're either going to have to take medication, you're going to have to put medicine directly at that specific site within millimeters of where it's occurring, or if the future, if it grows, possibly have to have that surgically decompressed.
All right, 1-800-552-8502, the number to call if you have a question for Dr. White this evening. We have Bob now waiting online with a question. So, Bob, good evening to you. Thanks for waiting. And what's your question?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Great.
Had shingles, zoster across the top of my face, involved the upper eyelid and forehead. Back in November, and serious pain. I mean, even after it cleared up, it was debilitating to the fact that I couldn't work for almost 8 weeks. Probably some permanent nerve damage there. The doctor, neurologist, said it would be 6 months before they could even tell whether, you know, the pain would go away. You know, what about shingles? Damage to the nerve in the face. Is there any treatment for that?
Okay, great question.
Well, I hadn't have. I've had a series of injections, narcotics, you name it, but I just can't do that anymore.
Okay, that's a great question. Shingles, i.e., that's the virus of the chicken pox. Okay, that people, for some individuals, it kind of lies dormant, goes to sleep, and it wakes up. We really don't know why. And certain individuals get it and certain individuals don't. We know it's brought out with illnesses, stress, sleep issues. There's a lot of reasons that can trigger, and it can come for no reason at all, but that actually affect a nerve that actually goes into the face. It sounds like it's what we call the trigeminal nerve. It's a nerve that splits into three different pathways. But shingles, once the rash resolves, okay, it changes its name. It starts to go into a domain known as post-herpetic neuralgia, or PHN, and that is a form of nerve damage or nerve scarring. Okay, now that what the neurologist is saying, needing to wait to 6 months, that's right. Some people can have neural recovery or self-neural repair, and their symptoms will improve. But those individuals that go prolonged with that type of nerve damage, there is some extremely specialized neuromodulation I was talking earlier about. That can be trialed, where they actually place it in the pathway of where those nerves run in the face. One of the world's experts is in Dallas for it specifically, and that's all he does. Does it for that type of thing and non-treatable headaches. But once you get there, you know, there's another thing that you hear, such as the gamma knife treatment that is done at LSU with Dr. Nanda. Mm-hmm. People, that's also another potential option. But obviously the injections have not worked. And at this point, I do agree with the neurologist. Wait in a six-month period to really get an idea which direction is this going would be very logical and a very smart way to do it. Trying to jump the gun, trying to think you need to have some kind of permanent interventional solution and not really knowing is this going to possibly improve would be a mistake.
All right. You're listening to Health Matters this evening. My guest, Dr. William S. White with Louisiana Pain Physicians. And in a moment, I want to ask you a little bit more about, because you were kind of leading earlier in our conversation about some of the most current treatments, the Space Odyssey treatments. But let's go ahead and take one more question right now, because we have Andy holding. Andy, good evening to you. Thanks for waiting on hold for us. What's your question tonight?
My question is, I was diagnosed with spinal stenosis 10, 12 years ago by the VA system. And I never had any surgery done to it. They wouldn't give me surgery. All they would do is, give me the steroid injections every so often. And I haven't had anything done since then. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, the pain is unbearable. And they're not doing anything for me. And I just guess that I'd like to find out what the prognosis is.
Okay, what is spinal stenosis, first of all?
Spinal stenosis, the word stenosis means narrowing of a canal. So again, remember our spine looks like a long pipe, and right. It has holes on the side, kind of like a flute on both sides, left and right. And stenosis means that hole where the nerves are traveling or closing up to the point where it's causing compression and pain. Particularly what you hear is those standing and walking, it's relieved by sitting or what I call the shopping cart method. They lean on the shopping cart over to help alleviate the pressure to allow them to walk. Now, there's two types of stenosis: in the major hole, the pipe, the central pipe, the big hole, or even the holes, the flute holes, can narrow up. So there's different types. What's important to know is several things with prognosis. You can't really do that. It's a visual thing and an exam thing. But the physical exam and a visual inspection of a CT or an MRI will tell you, we look at what's the degree of narrowing, how many levels are narrowed, okay, and do you have muscular changes? Do you have limb changes? Are you losing atrophy in your calves or in the front of your calves? Some of your thigh muscles starting to atrophy? And the sensory exam, that's how we tell what the prognosis is. But somebody who's had pain for a long period of time, sounds like they're having rounds of these injections, they really need to be evaluated for the next level. And I tell people the best advocate for you is you, is the patient. The patient has to take control and, go to a first choice area. Go to a person who understands the surgical and the non-surgical aspects. That's what interventional brings you, to really know what are all your options and to get you into the right direction. But I tell patients out there, the most important advocate of the patient is the patient themselves.
All right. 1-800-552-8502, the number to call tonight if you have a question for Dr. White. What I wanted to get back to just briefly, if we could, because you had hinted at some of the newer technologies, but I'm sure there are plenty of new directions in your field that we're not familiar with, and I wondered if perhaps you could just talk about a few of them.
Sure. The biggest problem in the field of pain were things that really could not be corrected with really medicines and really couldn't be corrected surgically. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. And we all have know individuals who have, they had some things done, although some function improved, they're still having some debilitated pain. And that's where the neuromodulation comes in, and that's for nerve damage. And so neuromodulation is an electrical means. And I'm not talking the top. There's neuromodulation where leads are put in the spine above the surgical site, and it's connected to a pacemaker source, a battery source that's about the size of two silver dollars glued together. Okay. And these batteries can last 10, 12, 15 years. And they emit a energy source, an electrical field, to block a damaged pain signal. So let's imagine if somebody had an amputation, let's say, and they have horrible phantom pain, they have horrible nerve pain resulting from that. These can actually be placed, and that damaged nerve signal that travels up the leg, up the back, up the spine, that is traveling to the head, that damaged pain signal is decreased or attenuated, as we call, or blocked. And as soon as you turn it on, they can have instantaneous decrease in relief of their symptoms. patients don't have, you don't have to convince the patient. The patient will look you in the eye and just give you that sign of, ah, oh, that's amazing. They now make those for just back pain, where they can actually be put under the skin subcutaneously over the under the where the scar areas are. The gentleman with the shingles, which, you know, after the post-herpetic neuralgia, when it's fully in the nerve damage mode, there's people that are actually implanting those under the skin around those facial areas to block that type of pain source. It's absolutely remarkable. I tell the future is now. It's remarkable what can be done. Although there's interventional specialists around who are really limited, who do all the, I mean, just really have a command, not of the basics, but can really do all these type of things, is important. You know, these people, you got to look for the fellowship-trained qualifications of these people. Are they fellowship-trained in interventional spine? And there's, it's really remarkable when we start to look at this. The other thing is, let's talk about just, let's get away from nerve. You know, disc is such an incredible ailment. A lot of research is being done, just not nationally, but internationally as well, from areas of the biologics, creating chemicals in one day hope to inject to help repair. Although those are still in their infancy, they have a great opportunity to be really the future. Uh-huh. We have, you know, the replacement disc that the surgeons are now, you know, partaking in to help, rather than just the hardware, just have a motion segment. There's new physical therapy techniques that are being done today. Medicines are even getting better. I think what's important to patients is that we all know medicine changes very rapidly. So it's important that you really are sitting before a physician. You go to a doctor's office, you expect to be evaluated by the physician. The physician's evaluating you. And then they're going over all your findings of what you need. And they're talking to you in a way that is very understandable face-to-face, and to say, listen, I think this is important. Let's try to get to the root of this. Not saying you come in, I have pain, let's go to do this. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's try to find the source, and let's work together of a real treatment plan as to how can we not only diagnose, you know, the source or sources, but what are our treatments, what are the potential success rates, what do we need to avoid, what do we need to change in our lives or our workplace, And how can we correct this? That is what people, even though they may not be able to tell you those things, that's what they're looking for. And to leave, not every person has the answer to everything. But I think if somebody looks in the eye and says, I really don't know where that's coming from, but let's see if we can find somebody to help us or work with us. And that's very important. In my practice, I've treated many of physicians. And and it's really a great collaborative experience because, you know, they're learning as a physician, being a patient themselves, what do these people come in and complain of and experience. And it's as an old professor of mine says, you will never understand a disease until you suffer it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And that's absolutely true.
Is it also true, do physicians really make the worst patients?
No comment on that.
800-552-8502, the number to call. We've had Ken holding for a long time. Thanks for being so patient. And I guess you have a question about water in the spinal cord. Ken, go ahead with your question.
Yes, it was a strange trip that I went on. Number one, I started with water. It felt like water in my fingertips. And the doctor thought that I had some kind of lung disease. But it ended up being a pain in my upper shoulder and then through my chest and in my elbow. And I asked my doctor about it, and she knew right away that it was the C7 vertebrae, that there was something wrong there. And she suggested initially that I go to a chiropractor and have them try to adjust it. But then I had an MRI, and they found a pocket of fluid in my spine, in the center of my spine, that ran down. There's a string that runs all. I saw the MRI that runs all the way down my spine in a bubble in the top, and they said that needed to be drained because it was causing this pain. And I went ahead and had the surgery, and they inserted a shunt in there, and it drains into my lungs. And I assume that it's electronic somehow, because when the pressure builds, that it continues to drain. They told me I had no option that was all I could do, because if I didn't do it, it was gradually going to get worse. I was having a lot of pain in my foot and a lot of pain in my chest. But when they did the surgery, the pain in my foot disappeared, the pain in my chest disappeared, but I lost all feeling from my halfway up my body, my torso, all the way down. And my question is, what's my future going to be like? I'm on medication, and the medication works great, but some days it doesn't work at all. Some days I'm just in terrible amount of pain, and my feet, they just seem to swell constantly. I take this medication, but I've had to increase it. Started out with a few pills a day, and now I'm taking several pills a day. Do you know anything about that? Hydromyelia.
Yes, that's hydromyelia is a fluid collection of pocket. It can originate from a trauma. It can originate just from a shunt problem in the brain that backs up. But what they did is they're shunting that fluid, known as a basically traveling the fluid through a hose to be reaccumulated in the lung and to get absorbed in the lung. As far as the pain question is concerned, you know, unfortunately, not everything that people suffer is correctable. Okay, mm-hmm. Now that pain that you're talking about, they're trying to manage it with medication, and the pain that you're having, you know, that's from spinal cord pain. That's actual injury or tissue of the spinal cord being splayed apart. I commend them. The getting restoration of function is pretty impressive. You need to know not everybody is so lucky with that type when they have that type of problem and decompression of that fluid out of the spinal cord. But as far as the pain is concerned to date, other than opioids, we don't have anything to repair a spinal cord injury. That's basically myelopathic pain or pain originated from the spinal cord. We do not have that. Now, there are some current studies going on with respect to that using neuromodulation up high in the spinal cord near the brainstem, but that is still being studied, and it really isn't available to the public. One of the experts that deals with that is up in the University of Chicago specifically.
1-800-552-8502 if you have a question for Dr. White this evening. We're discussing pain. Kay has been waiting. Kay, thank you so much for holding on there. And what's your question this evening?
Oh, thanks. I'm delighted to wait. Hello, Dr. White.
Hello.
I've had two back surgeries. The first laminectomy was without instrumentation. The second one was with instrumentation. And the last one was in 06. Since then, I have become more crippled. I have done the injections. They last for a while. I've done medication. I've done a little physical therapy. My question to you is, because now I've developed stenosis, my primary physician tells me that is, it's never going to go away. It's going to get worse. My question to you is, what are the benefits and risks of a morphine pump? Because I feel like I've just about done everything else.
Well, great question. You're having symptoms that we call multifactorial. There's not one thing causing any kind of problem. So what I mean by that is that you had the pipe was closed that we've been describing, they shave part of that pipe open to give you more room. Okay, that's what they did. So think of a narrowing of the pipe where the hourglass narrows and kind of chipping that away and giving you more of an opening of that area. That's what they did. That's the laminectomy for the viewers. And then when they did the second time, they again shaved the bone, removed it, and then since you had two levels that you did not have that bony support, they had to artificially support it. Similar to a carpenter, okay, putting mm-hmm. the support. Prior to the stenosis, sounds like she's had pain for some time. She's describing she's gone through therapy, the whole regime, and she gets temporary relief. So part of this pain has to be post-surgical pain, nerve-based related. Also, it's multifactorial. It's probably nerve-based pain. It's probably bone-based pain and some disc and compressive pain from the narrowing she says she has above. You know, morphine pumps, what that is it's a well. Think of a metal pocket of or a container that holds medication, and it distills that directly into the spine. As far as the potential benefits and risks associated with that, that's very individual. They actually do a test or what they call a trial of that to determine, one, what reactions may you have and what relief you may you have, and two, what are you going to expect from that? They have to be filled routinely. They have to be managed. The batteries of the pumps don't last as long as such as what I said earlier, the spinal cord stimulators, because mm-hmm. it's running a machine. It's a pump. Mm-hmm. So that's very individual. It is going to require a trial, as they call it, a test to see your benefits. So there is no one answer to that. I would say is that have all the options been explored, you know, that morphine is, again, we're looking at the medication road, okay, a pharmacologic. Has other things been explored, such as a possible relief from neuromodulation? And then when we talk of injections, there's multitudes of different types of injections that can be done and treatments can be done. So I don't know if maybe they have been explored or maybe they not have not, but prior to having an artificial device implanted in your body that you will need to be married to distilling medicine into, I think that, one, you need to make sure all your options have been explored. And secondly, you need to do a test or trial to see whether or not you really are going to have some benefit. And is that right for you?
Just a quick question, because you've referred both to neuromodulation and spinal stimulation. Now, are they the same thing?
They are. Neuromodulation is a general category. And that can include spinal stimulation, spinal cord stimulation, peripheral nerve stimulation from damage. So that's just a general category.
All right. And these are very new technologies.
They are new technologies.
So is this an area that maybe there are still a lot of physicians that aren't familiar enough with to possibly recommend?
That's correct. And we have been trying to educate, you know, okay. for the past 5 years with it. But the reality of it is it sounds science fiction to people. They think it's something that's been out in that's such as what you get with a physical therapist known as a TENS unit, and they're quite different, okay. and they're remarkable. And we have had a number of, we've done a lot of them, and it's unbelievable how it changed your life. I mean, from people who are completely disabled, back to work, mothers, fathers, grandfathers, grandmothers, unbelievable the change. And it really empowers them, and they don't have the limitation to medication that they would have, or just even with meds, it wasn't enough relief. It wasn't giving them what they needed. So, you know, neuromodulation was added to it. And again, it's blocking signals where they travel, where they're going to. And so you're catching it right at its point of intersection from the limb to the brain.
Okay.
And it's really, and you can test them. These don't just put in. You actually undergo a trial where it's tested, and you wear them 3 to 5 days, so the patients know in their soul how much is it helping. And we considered if it doesn't give them at least 50% relief of pain with activity, it's considered a failure. So that's, we're not talking like Moscow. We're talking big changes,
a tremendous difference. Well, this is another part I think maybe related to that, because you said this is. In addition to the medication, or is it possible to eliminate the medication?
That's right. We actually do a trial, and then once they see how much relief they get, and they get that when they go to implant, it is, in our setting, nearly 70% are completely off all meds. They just don't require them. They say, and they come say, you know, I want to get off of these. I'm not having pain. We start tapering them down. And then some can reduce them to a point that they don't really have the cognitive or the memory or the brain limitation. They don't have some of the things that they may experience from time to time. So it gives them options. Again, it's all about giving the patient options and not being married to one modality of treatment, whether it be pills or therapy or surgery or doing nothing and suffering.
All right. Sounds like an amazing technology. We still have some time for a few more questions. 800-552-8502 is the number to call if you have a question for Dr. White. Sarah has been very patient holding to ask her question. Good evening to you, Sarah. What's your question?
Well, my question is, did you really say if you feel a sensation of wetness on your foot?
That was an earlier question. You made that reference.
Right. Nerve symptoms are often described many different ways. Some people will call it burning. Some people will call it pressure, tingling. They can say it feels wet. They have a sensation it's wet.
And this is something you're experiencing?
Yes. And the same two toes have been burning. I had compression fractures in my mid-30s. I'm 67 now. And I've been amazingly symptom-free since healing from that. But I did have some sciatic pain in my right leg about 6 months ago that was resolved just with pain medication and waiting. But lately, in fact, just yesterday, I felt my toes burn. And then today, I had on sandals. I thought I had stepped in water. So how urgent is it that I check this out?
Well, a couple things. One, you've had sciatica before, okay, and repeat episodes, whether it's the same symptoms or different symptoms, important. Secondly, the wet feeling is nerve. It is nerve, my advice would be this: you're having wet symptoms, they're isolated to the toes. I would relate it. One, seems to be related to activity. Two, is it intermittent for short periods of time, or is it increasing and becoming more constant? If it's really activity related, it's worse and increasing and more constant, then that needs to be evaluated. That can be the early signs or hallmark of a nerve problem. They mm-hmm. don't have to originate in the back and run down. They can originate in the distally and work their way up. That is not uncommon. Now, the other thing you need to understand is have to ensure that there's not a vascular problem, okay, such as a blood clot or insufficiency of blood flow. So if you're seeing changes in skin color, then I would contact your physician immediately to have that evaluated.
I had a question for you as we're waiting to get the next caller in here. What about alternative ways of treating pain? I know a lot of people turn to acupuncture, that type of thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of people, we as physicians, if we don't understand something, sometimes we want to dismiss it. But acupuncture has been around longer than conventional medicine. Mm-hmm. It's known that it helps to release endorphins. So think of it a non-pill way of trying to deal with muscular type of pain and some neuropathic pain. I'm not an acupuncture practitioner, but I was fortunate enough to train, where I trained was the University of Pennsylvania, where they had an acupuncturist. And it was remarkable how well they did. And it was used in an adjunct to other therapies. It wasn't often used solely. It was used in adjunct to other therapies. And many people found it beneficial. I have undergone acupuncture myself, but I've had enough patients when I was in training who really, really believed in it, and it helped. And it helped to decrease their medications. It helped continue on with their activities and not feel so limited. So there is definitely benefit to it.
All right. 800-552-8502, the number to call if you have a question this evening. We do have another one, and this one really does sound like it's on the cutting edge, or maybe something that might be experimental, but you'll know more than I have, as I think this has to do with computers and interfacing with the brain to control pain. This is Walter, and Walter, go ahead with your specific question.
I'm trying to design a unit that will interface the brain so that you can pre-record your sensations and then play it back to the brain, either releasing dopamines or the endorphins. And you can also work on addictive behaviors, bipolarism, and other things. I'm hoping I can even download directly into the brain.
Well, are there technologies that they're looking at that are being studied that relate? I mean, that has to have something to do with how the other device that you were talking about was developed.
Well, they currently have known as deep brain stimulators, and a well-trained physician locally who does it. Deep brain stimulators are used in Parkinson's or Huntington's disease for uncontrolled tremors. What's interesting, I have a current patient we've been treating. Glad to say his spinal pain is doing great, but he had this uncontrolled tremor. It was to the point he could not drive. he was really, it's really having a difficulty in his life. Referred him, he had it done. I saw him this week, Monday, in the great question, final question, and his tremor was nearly completely gone. He could not believe how he regained his life with it. So, and he had this for some time, and just, you know, was, and he was never offered the therapy. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of getting to those people who kind of are exposed to this and can point him in the right direction. But I can tell you he's doing fabulous. And I asked him, I said, would you do it again? He goes, I would do it again 100 times. That's how much has changed his life. So with respect to his specific question, if he comes up with that, he may be the next Bill Gates. That'd be incredible.
So, wide open for, you know, for that opportunity.
Well, we do a lot of this. You know, we're getting ready, just so I may say, we're getting ready to have a public forum. It's open to the public, obviously. It's March 29th at 6 p.m. at Natchitoches Regional Medical Center, talking about all these things. We've been kind enough, a vendor by the name of St. Jude is bringing devices for patients to see and kind of see what this is and touch and feel and have questions. So it's open to the public. We've already had, my understanding, a great sign-up. People have already saying their turnout. It's going to be a pretty big event.
So what's the date I've done this again?
March 29th at 6 p.m. It'd be myself and Dr. Wheat. He's our affiliate with us at Natchitoches Regional Hospital, and it's open to the public. We know physicians are coming to attend. It's going to be a nice event. We're going to have actual PowerPoints and actual hands-on to be able to see these things and be able to discuss face-to-face what's involved. So I think it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful thing for patients as well as physicians to get informed to the latest technologies, what's out there, and really know it's not science fiction. It's science fiction made to reality.
That's incredible. We are up to our last call. One more call here this evening as we're getting to the end of this Health Matters. And this is Steve. Steve, thanks for calling. How you doing this evening?
Fine.
All right. What's your question?
Dr. White?
Yes, sir.
I was just turning the radio on, sitting out on the front porch. I said, that voice sounds familiar.
Must be a patient of yours.
I am a patient of yours, and I'm the Nepalese trekker. Recall?
Say that again.
I am the Nepalese.
Oh, I do. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Wonderful man here. He's quite the traveler.
That's what it sounds like.
are you back on U.S. soil?
Yes, I am.
Good.
And I'm scheduled to see you again on March the 25th, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So what's your question this evening?
My question is this. You have discussed with me my stenosis, my bone spurs, and the disc problems I have in my lumbar region. You've also discussed surgical intervention because the epidurals worked for 1 month, and that was it. My question is this. In the surgical process, how is the spinal canal or the nerve, the openings, how are they enlarged?
Okay.
How is that bone removed?
Yeah. There's many different ways. You have to understand, I don't do the neurosurgical or orthopedic decompression. But in general, there are tools specific to chip, cut, and trim away. The specific answer to that question has to deal with the type of stenosis for the audience they may have. The lady earlier said that she had a laminectomy, meaning that she had a wall of her pipe or wall of that canal opened up. It was removed. That's one way. Some can be partially removed. Some don't need to be removed at all. They can be trimmed. Sometimes some individuals, it's not bony. It's disc-based, so they trimmed a disc. What's important to understand is when the surgeon opens it up and they get in, that's better than any picture you can ever get, because you can really see how narrowed something is, and they customize it. It's not cookbook involved. They're going to pick what is the best way, the best benefit, and the least invasive from a surgical standpoint that they can open up a canal to give somebody relief.
All right. Well, Dr. White, William S. White, this has been really a fascinating discussion, And the technologies, I think, are absolutely incredible. And I hope that we'll have the opportunity to come back and discuss this at some future point. But I appreciate you being here tonight.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
Health Matters is for informational purposes only. And as always, if you have a specific medical issue, you should always consult with your own physician. Tonight's program was produced by Renee Moran, engineered by Bill Beckett and Rick Shelton, with assistance from Wally Derleth. I'm your host, Kermit Poling. Thanks for being with us tonight, and hope to have you along again on the next Health Matters.
You've been listening to Health Matters on KDAQ. We are KDAQ Shreveport Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado, and KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches. We are your public broadcasting service for the Arklatex. Red River Radio, a broadcast service from LSUS.